Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and we're going to bring in Cynthia Hoschmeyer, who's joined us on the telephone. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And how are you this morning?
Super happy it's not snowing.
That's right.
You could be in Colorado. I have unhappy people who are contacting me from Colorado.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, you know. I'm surprised we haven't had snow yet. Everything else has gone to hell this year.
Holy smoke, San Francisco, too. My uncle lives there, and the reports on what the sky is like, horrifying.
Well, they say it's like living on Mars. It's that orangish, reddish.
Red planet, yeah.
And if I was those people by the lake, I'd stay right by the lakeside.
You're in Salisbury?
No. In California.
Oh, California, yeah.
Anyway, well, let's go to the front page of the Lakeville Journal, and that is the first story we will start off with, which is the picture, the strange new world that schools. We posted a picture from the Housatonic Twitter account of the students maintaining social distance and masks yesterday. And when we spoke with Lisa Carter after day one, except for the traffic jam in Salisbury, which, by the way, they corrected in one day.
Yeah, that was amazing that they
corrected that in one day. Everything really, so far, knock on wood, is going okay in Region 1.
And, of course, traffic jams because more parents are driving their children to school as opposed to putting them on the school bus. Although the buses are still out and are required to run and to make bus transportation available to all regional students, whether or not they choose to use it. And, of course, we did not do the bus routes this year. And when we heard about Hartford having to shut down for the first day of school because somebody hacked their bus route system, boy, the bus routes is very important, more, I think, than people acknowledge. So we have a lot of photos of the first day. Of course, the first day came right after a three-day weekend for us, which always throws our schedule off a little bit. And then we went to press early Tuesday morning, so we weren't able to devote a ton of space to photos, but it was not the most photogenic first day of school that we've ever had, in the sense that, you know, everybody had their masks on, there was no hugging, everybody was social distance. For the high school students, you know, of course, as we know, it's hard for the high school students to not socialize, but they have the maturity to do it. With little kids, we did see photos of youngsters getting off the bus, had their masks off already, had to be reminded to keep them on, and, you know, for youngsters who I think maybe sometimes find it hard even to keep shoes on during school, it's going to be a real challenge to teach them to remember to protect themselves and their classmates. So we'll see how that goes. But we have a lot of photos of first day on Instagram from Patrick Sullivan in Salisbury and Lance Christensen in Kent.
It's funny, when I spoke to Lisa Carter on Tuesday, she also gave the official stat figures for the attendance in Region 1. And as I said, as bad news as a pandemic is, all the schools are up this year, Salisbury and Sharon up significantly. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, we've had several people contact us here at the radio station, people that have just moved into the area.
Yeah, still coming.
Yeah,
the real estate boom is not over.
That find us and say, you know, bop, 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 bop. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the course of the whole school year.
Because if you were a betting person, no one in a million years would have said, oh, yeah, that's how you solve the school
I know.
Attendance.
Forget all the advertising and marketing.
Yeah.
But we also had the student populations, I think, last week. But the official first date of school, the day when the enrollment is actually counted, is October 1st. And it's going to be interesting, you know, not to be cynical, but since I am, it's going to be interesting to see if we get slammed by this hard winter that we're expecting. And a lot of people have bought houses here, and they've already experienced a week-long power with Tropical Storm Isaias. It's going to be interesting to see how many houses go back on the market next spring after we have a lot of
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Nice story by Patrick Sullivan. It was a smaller parade this year. It still raised about $2,000 for a local charity, but the historic festival kicked off with the antique race car parade on Thursday in our area.
That's right. All the cars pay $25 each. The funds went to Salisbury Winter Sports and the Falls Village Volunteer Fire Department. And this year, Lime Rock Park's historic festival, which is really one of the big draws for local people, was closed to spectators, although I went on Sunday to the Concours with my mask and my gloves, and there was still a fairly good crowd. There were a lot of cars, not quite as many cars as normal. Usually the cars line up the entire mile and a half of the racetrack. This year, I would say, look just anecdotally to be a little more than half full. I think there was something like 185 cars that took part this year. Lots of racing on Monday and on Saturday, and Lance Christensen on the inside has a great story about what the racing was like.
All right, a couple stories side by side, which kind of link together. First one was the announcement that the Gear Adult A Day Center has permanently closed. It was an interesting story because I first heard about it from somebody who called me and asked me if I knew anything about it, and then I managed to get the story on it. But that's and then the Salisbury visiting nurse has merged. We'll start off with Gear. This has always been a program that under the best of times is a financial stress, but when you add a pandemic in and everything else on top of it, it just became too much for Gear to keep operating it.
And the stress on the middle generation, the sandwich generation, is enormous now that you have more strain on child care systems and on schools and the potential threat of schools closing again, of child care centers closing again. If you're one of the many, many people in the Northwest Corner who's living with a child and with aging parents, it's a lot of potential care that you suddenly have to take on. And really sort of pushes you back to the days when there were, the three-generation family. But for modern families where both parents work, if you have an elder loved one, you want to know that during the day they're not isolated, that they're getting their meals, and even more so if you're an elder person who does not have children in the area, which I would say is probably a pretty large percent of them. So Gear Adult Day had been a wonderful program where they would not only, care for and entertain and offer socializing opportunities for older adults who are not really able to get out on their own. It offers the essential check-in on those older people to make sure that they're eating, to make sure that they're taking their meds, so that somebody is seeing them every day and going, I don't know, something is different today. I think that maybe this merits having a little visit to the doctor. So the finances of it are just too hard. Gear and Kevin O'Connell doing a stunningly good job of not only protecting their residents from COVID-19, but also managing to keep that facility open, which is so important to the Northwest Corner, for a retirement village, for rehabilitation care, and had been in the middle of making plans to expand not only and add new sort of cottage-like facilities for semi-independent living, but also to expand the YMCA, which is on the property and owned by Northwest Connecticut YMCA. It's all been hit really hard by COVID, and we'll hope that they come out because, again, an essential part of life here.
And another thing, most people don't realize, the Gear Adult Day Center was one of the oldest types of centers like that, not around here, not in Connecticut, but in the country. It was one of the first, if not, I'm not saying it was the first, but it was one of the first. And the other thing it did was give caregivers a break.
Right.
And a much needed break from this. So they're going to still try to put together and do some daycare stuff, but it has to evolve, and everything else right now. What you see today might not be here tomorrow. So everything's going to be evolving just because of the pandemic. And
a reminder to all of us here that there used to be, when I first moved here, there was a system where the senior services person in every town had a little box with file cards and had the names of every elderly person who needed to check once in a while. And neighbors would go and just pop their head in and say hi. And in my neighborhood, there were a lot of older people who similarly did that. They would check in on each other every day. They would phone every day, or they would come by and take a walk every day. And I would imagine that the senior lunches in the region have not been going on. A lot of older people really need someone to just, everybody's very independent here in New England and maybe not as good at reaching out and asking for help as they ought to be. So a reminder to all of us, if you have elderly neighbors, and a reminder to myself, we all need to check in on our elderly neighbors.
And the other story that goes along with this is that Salisbury visiting nurses lining up with Foothills visiting a nurse in home, Karen Winstead, and visiting home a nurse. It's now going to be called Visiting Nurse Home and Hospice in Litchfield County because it's teaming with the VNA Northwest as well. And it appears to me that this is one of those things where there's multiple assets which are covering multiple sites, and maybe this will be a little more efficient. From what I understand, if you're in this area and you're used to the person that's been coming to your house and working with you, it's going to stay that way. So this is also just a sign of the times.
And having, you know, been fortunate enough to have at Salisbury Visiting Nurse available to me at a time when my family needed it, you know, there is a lot of rotation. So it's not like you're, you know, there's three people working there and they come to your house every day. You get a different round of people who have different skill sets and, you know, for your different needs during the week. And, of course, when you see these mergers of different organizations, what it's saying is there's a financial strain, but we'll hope that it strengthens them, because I think everybody who lives in the Northwest Corner, probably everybody who's alive in the 21st century, knows the visiting nurses are such an essential aid to you when you have somebody in your family who's sick or dying, and to all of us as we, living alone, eventually need our own support.
We will switch to the center story on the front page, and that is by Lila Honkin, conservation in Cornwall.
There's, you know, so much going on, so much to worry about, and we look back on the days when one of our main concerns was how much land is being conserved in our beautiful rural region of the state every year. And so an update from the Conservation Trust in Cornwall of land that's recently been preserved, including the Trinity Preserve. But just a report on, you know, hundreds of acres, and also importantly what are known as the ridgeline, so that as you look out and you see these beautiful hilltops, which are historically hard to build on, but if you've ever been to the West Coast, you know that those ridgelines get built on very quickly if people are allowed to, because people want those views. So we're very fortunate here. We don't have houses porcupining our view sheds. Cornwall has just preserved more of those. Kent also has very aggressive ridgeline protections, and we'll see if other towns follow with that.
Remember that when that HBO guy built that house way up on top of the hill off of Route 7 in Sharon at the very top, and it took them about 2 years to build a road, and they had to actually crane trucks to get up the driveway, and they were only there part-time, and they found out that when they weren't there nine-tenths of the time, it was just off the Appalachian Trail. And the house, they had a beautiful ridgeline house, but it was trashed because they weren't up there enough.
Yeah.
But and that's what building on a ridgeline is. You take your chances. I want to go to the story underneath this, and that's our Congresswoman, Johanna Hayes, did another Zoom meeting in Cornwall.
Johanna Hayes, I have to say, has been very, I'm not sure why, but she's very connected to Cornwall. Like, there's something about the town of Cornwall. Maybe Gordon Ridgway, the first selectman, who's also very active in the Democratic Party. For whatever reason, Johanna Hayes is in Cornwall a lot, and she did a Zoom talk. And, of course, Johanna in the election, I believe, in November, and did a nice talk on Zoom. And as always, was very balanced and measured in what she said. And they ended up talking about, you know, the incredible struggles this year on race. And her response was, you know, what you would hope it would be, which is, very balanced, very thoughtful. Like, we need to move ahead, but let's not let this become a source of fighting. Let's make this what it should be, which is a source of us coming together, respecting each other and caring for each other.
All right, a couple of other stories. You've got the story, the Swansea Golf Tournament is on this year. It will benefit the Jane Lloyd Fund. By the way, if you can donate the Jane Lloyd Fund, go to their site and donate, because they have lost almost all their fundraising events for this year.
And they were just about to be able to reach the point where they could put some money aside and work off the endowment. So the Jane Lloyd Fund, for people who don't know it, Jane was a beloved local person from a very large local family, and was a landscaper, and as such had no insurance, because, of course, this is before the Affordable Care Act. And she got cancer, and her family started this fund in her memory, not to pay for medical costs, but to pay for the cost of everyday living, so that if you have cancer and you're struggling to make, just to stay alive, it helps you pay for your rent and your electricity and your groceries. And it's a really essential, it's one of those funds that makes life in the Northwest Corner, and specifically Salisbury, you know, there's really a safety net here. We watch out for each other. So if you're looking for a cause to support, this is a really excellent one.
And we're supplying, by the way, the hole in one, as we always do for Swans on that. But also, we switched to two other virtual things. The Sharon Daycare Center road race is going to be virtual this year, and the crop walk is also going to be virtual.
Right, and we have a story next week, September 17th, by Hunter Lyle on the Sharon Classic Road Race with some details on that. And we have the crop walk, which has always been a big part, again, of life in the Northwest Corner. Usually there's a big launch from the property at in front of Housatonic Valley Regional High School on the green. There's usually, you know, the Salisbury Band plays, and somebody notable comes along and cuts the ribbon, and everybody goes off. And Marshall, you've walked it many times, I think.
I haven't walked it in many years, but yes, I walked the first 10 years. I walked 8 out of the 10 years. Yeah.
And a nice walk, so now, of course, they're doing it virtual, and we're just all finding ways.
I would have loved the virtual one, that first one, because it took me a year and a half to recover from it.
I want to do it on my Nordic track in the basement.
I want to move on, because you've got a great story by Hunter Lyle. People can remember when in Kent, one of the residents there was deported by ICE, and students have put together a documentary on that.
This is a really, really big deal in Kent. Beloved local figure. I believe he worked at the Villager, and I think maybe he'd worked at the Fife before that. People really liked him. He's got a wife, he's got kids, and he was picked up by ICE. And, you know, sadly, there's so much going on that we forget these stories as time goes on. And the Civic Life Project, which is out of Cornwall and run by Dominique Lisser and Catherine Tadke, who are actually sadly, you know, leaving the area. The judging is tonight for the student films. Civic Life is a program where they go into schools and they try to give young people a voice, and they say, don't just sit there and stew and be angry about these things that are important to you. Make a movie about it. And we asked Hunter to go in and find out a little bit about what some local kids were doing. Three students at the Marvelwood School under Ben Willis, who is a documentary filmmaker who lives in the area, did a movie about Tino, and definitely worth watching. And the judging will be tonight, and we will try to get the results of that in the paper.
Civic Life Project, they put out amazing what the students and who work with them, they put out amazing video and as good as just about any documentary that you'll see. I'm so impressed by the work that they do with students around here. It's amazing.
Right. Dominique and Catherine, yeah. I think, worked with Bill Moyers.
Yeah.
Back in the day, great, very experienced documentary filmmakers.
All right, Beauty versus the Cost. I had a few calls on this earlier this week. The bridge repair in Cornwall.
This is the classic Northwest Corner debate where nobody wants their taxes to go up, but everybody wants to have the most beautiful bridge that they can possibly have. And we actually have a letter this week from Inga Heckel in Salisbury where there's work being done on the Salmon Kill Road Bridge, which also, you know, Curtis Rand, who's the first selectman in Salisbury, very much of a bridge guy and had spent a lot of time and energy making sure that the bridge on the Salmon Kill River was beautiful and also very solid. You know, the essential always is the bridge has to be in good shape, but rivers are unpredictable, and that bridge has got to be repaired again. And it's going to be expensive, and it's taking a long time. People are wondering what's going on with it. So the same thing with the bridge over Cogswell Road in Cornwall. The bridge has to be upgraded and updated, and there's a long discussion at the Cornwall Selectmen's meeting about the most expensive way to do it, which should be more aesthetically pleasing, or the more expedient way to do it, which is we got to get it done. We don't have a ton of money right now. We just need to fix this. And, of course, you know, some of these bridges are around for decades before they have to be upgraded again, one hopes. So they want it to look nice.
All right. Nice story by Patrick Sullivan on the show at the Salisbury Association, Birds in Decline.
The show's been actually open virtually for the whole summer, and now it's open in person. You know, I wish we could say, you know, good news, but it's not. It's more bad news. So a lot of things preying on our local bird populations. It feels like there's birds everywhere, but there really are a lot of predators, you know, from domestic cats who eat an unbelievable number of songbirds. Just also the weather is screwing things up, and just, you know, a lot of things that are taking down our local bird population. And the bird population here is changing, which I think is interesting if you're a bird watcher, but, you know, probably not that great for the future of bird health.
You've got some great pictures on A4, the Historic Festival, and our good friend Mr. Rand from Sharon won the race on one of the races on Monday.
It is a nice thing that there's local people who take part in the Historic Festival at Lime Rock Park. Was that Lawrence Rand?
Mike Rand. And it was just nice to see him up there because he's been a longtime racer. He's also, of course, he was manager of the park for many years. So even though it wasn't like normal, but it still was there, and we still had it. Let's go to the viewpoint and opinion pages. Once again, your editorial stepping up to support beloved art venues.
And this actually mirrors an editorial that we had in the Millington News last week and a story that we have in Compass this week. But very important, two really beloved arts venues here that even if you don't go to them all the time, you know that you're glad they're here. And one is the Sharon Playhouse, and one is the Movie House in Millerton. And they've joined forces. And we're very lucky right now to have Robert Levenstein and Alan Wager running the Playhouse and really treating it as though they own it, which is a beautiful thing. So it would have been very easy for them to just stay in New York this summer and just say, you know what, not really our problem. We hope that you guys do okay. They've been up here working their tails off, trying to make sure that there's interesting stuff for all of us to see there. And now they've joined up with Carol Sadlon, the beloved owner of the Movie House, who's had more than her share of trauma in the last year. Her husband died in 2019 from a brain tumor, and she's been struggling to keep the Movie House viable at a time when people can't, you know, still go to movie theaters in New York State. So they've joined forces. They're showing movies. They're showing Jaws right now, and they've got a schedule of movies coming up. We have the full schedule in Compass this week.
All right, and the Peter Steiner cartoon. Either you're going to get it or you don't get it, but it's a great cartoon. Lots of letters and lots of different, of course, articles on the editorial page, and lots of letters again.
Right, and a lot of diversity of viewpoint, which is what we always want. Chris Powell, who tends to take a little more conservative view, Ralph Nader, you know, who is very much Ralph Nader and always has his own Ralph Nader point of view, and Dick Aulis, who we always love, a really experienced journalist, talking about what it's like as a journalist to cover elections. And, you know, if you ever read a journalist's biography or autobiography, a lot of it is about the elections. So a very interesting column from him. And then Bill Schmick, our investor, talking about masks. Mask, I don't know if you're like me. I think I've received about a dozen different masks as gifts. Everybody's making them. They're fundraisers. They're decorative. There's lots of different different masks that you're getting out there. Mary Taylor writing about the corner food pantry. Mike Abram, very thoughtful, interesting guy in Salisbury, talking about our very interesting Attorney General, William Tong, who we wrote about last week, two different articles on issues that he's really stepped up on the post office and Eversource. And Mike, who supports Tong and, of course, feels that maybe he didn't even go far enough. And if you've ever read an email statement from our Attorney General, it's always funny to think of him not going far enough.
All right, we have about 2 minutes left to talk about Compass.
So John Milnes Baker, who's a very interesting, thoughtful guy in Kent, very civic-oriented, did a beautiful little trails book that he drew, because, of course, as an architect, he's a good draftsman. He's super fascinated by the idea that William Shakespeare was not William Shakespeare, that it was actually a man named Edward de Vere, and many of us, of course, have also heard the theory that Francis Bacon was William Shakespeare, that Christopher Marlowe was William Shakespeare. And then I actually got an email from somebody else with another person that, you know, he thought was William Shakespeare. So this is one of those things, like, you know, who killed John Kennedy, or did we actually land on the moon, that people are endlessly fascinated with and will continue to debate. So September 17th, John Milnes Baker, who did a little booklet, self-published, that he wanted for his grandchildren to have, he says, you know, I don't care if you think that Edward de Vere was Shakespeare, but this is a way of sort of thinking outside the box and using critical judgment to question things, stories that have been handed down. And boy, is this ever a time in our history when we've been doing that. Beloved Mark Scarborough, who teaches many book groups and does many book clubs in the area, has a cult following, and now he's doing the poetry of Wallace Stevens, really one of the only poets that I really like, and so I'm actually signed up for the class, but learn about Wallace Stevens and the class in this little article. Again, Sharon Playhouse and the Movie House, the listing of films, all of them with some kind of a local connection coming up, starting with Jaws, and then doing silent films with a musical accompaniment by Donald Sosin and Joanne Seaton. Read the list there. Guy and Ben Wolf make the most beautiful pots, very old-time inspired, very clean and beautiful, often in white and gray clay. And 100 Main here in Falls Village is now selling their work. It's very hard to get Ben Wolf's pottery right now. He's selling out also with Guy Wolf, his father, the original historic pots. You could still stop by his studio in Bantam, but you know, there's a huge demand right now for pots because everybody's gardening indoors. And then coming up at Music Mountain, a tribute to Peter Serkin, the great pianist, on September 13th.
All right, Cynthia, we'll check with you next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Cynthia Oswinder, this week in the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com on the web is where you will find them.